On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. I'm really grateful you're joining us here today because we're going to have a fabulous conversation. You may be listening live here on 1150 AM KKNW here in the Seattle area or anywhere around the world live on Transformation Talk Radio. You might be listening after the fact to a recording in archives on ChristineUpchurch.com, on iTunes, or one of the 90 different places the podcasts end up. But wherever and whenever you're listening from, I'm really grateful you joined us here today. And I want to say hello to the man behind the magic with all those screens across the counter and technology so that you can hear these great conversations. Mr. Benny Mathers, good morning.
Hi, Christine. They're all for show. I only use one.
Okay.
You know what they say about
after all
men
these
and their
years.
Screams.
Now you've burst my bubble. You know? It's like I'm in my sixth year here, and that's the first I've ever heard
so
of that.
So I have six screens for one for each year of you being here. So when you graduate to another year, I'll bring in another screen.
Sounds good. I don't know if you'll be able to fit it, but
I can do it. I can do it.
And before I get into who our guest is today, I wanted to remind everybody that my TEDx talk is up and live on YouTube. You can either go into YouTube and just type Christine Upchurch, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, Up and Church together, or go to my own YouTube channel or go to my website, ChristineUpchurch.com. There's a link from there. I talk about the surprising and hidden benefits of feeling like an outsider. I think most of us have felt like an outsider at one point or another. Some people have felt like an outsider for life. There are many people who are masquerading as insiders, but they actually feel like outsiders. So I encourage you to take a listen and watch and see what you think. If it helps you to feel more comfortable in your outsidedness and perhaps give you some strategies for dealing with the next time you might feel like an outsider.
What the good part about that is that the more views you get, the larger your population increases. And
yes.
So you get more hits, more people. So everyone needs to know about this. Everyone needs to pass along to their friends and people
Thank
that
you.
Might be having some issues or going through stuff. This is the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. And this is on my new YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And it's relatively new. So check out the other videos there and my Facebook Live posts I'm going to start putting up there as well. So I'm really excited about our guest today because I think she's talking about something that affects so many people in Western culture, particularly in the United States, but all over the world. And she takes a perspective that's a little bit different, a little bit deeper, and I'm just very impressed. The person I'm talking about today is Julie M. Simon, and she is a licensed psychologist and a life coach. She founded the popular Los Angeles-based and online 12-week emotional eating recovery program. She offers workshops at places like Whole Foods and UCLA, and she is the author of two books. Her first book was called The Emotional Eater's Repair Manual, and her more recent book, which is a wonderful book, is called When Food is Comfort. She lives in LA, and we've got her here in Seattle via technology. I'm so happy to welcome our guest today, Julie M. Simon. Hi, Julie.
Hi there. So happy to be here with you today.
It's so great to have you here. You know, I have to tell you, I read at least a book a week, you know, for my shows generally. And sometimes I'll actually read a book about, you know, something that's not related to my show. And, you know, I read a lot of sometimes the same thing, different perspective. We've got a lot of wonderful guests. But I tell you, when I was reading your book, I think I was probably into like the second or third chapter when you were talking about sort of the structure, the framework of how the emotional relationship with food develops. I found myself having tears in my eyes. It's like you were getting to the heart of the matter. First of all, I want to know, why have you written this book?
Well, that's a good question. You know, as you mentioned earlier, my first book, it was called The Emotional Eater's Repair Manual.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, I teach kind of the mind, body, and spirit skills and principles and practices that people are missing to really put an end to emotional eating and stop dieting.
Mm-hmm.
And after that book came out, and in that book, I teach the reader, one of the things I teach the reader is how to access an inner supportive voice. You know, really reduce the voice of the inner critic and develop an inner supportive voice. And after that book came out, I got emails from people all over the world telling me, you know, I really never knew how to nurture myself, and this really is the road out of a lifetime of suffering and overeating. And those skills and principles and practices were directly from my 12-week program. And so I thought, you know, I want to do a deeper dive in the second book into not only helping people understand the brain chemistry, the brain, the neuroscience, you know, behind kind of a lifetime of overeating or imbalanced eating, what's going on in the brain. And I also wanted to really do a deeper dive in the mindfulness skills I taught in the first book, really expand on building that supportive inner voice that really helps you kind of put an end to overeating. So that's what got the second book started.
Mm-hmm. So I'm fascinated with your discussion about whether or not we've ever learned to nurture ourselves. Can you explain, like, the healthy versus unhealthy childhood and what that can lead to if it's unhealthy?
Yes. Basically, you know, when we're infants and small children, little toddlers, we all need to have caregivers that are able to really tune in to our emotional states, our emotions and our bodily sensations, and offer us comfort and soothing, help us meet our needs.
Mm-hmm.
And most caregivers do a pretty good job at that, especially, you know, with infants. They do a pretty good job with that. But if a caregiver, a parent, kind of didn't get their needs met when they were young, maybe they had a depressed caregiver or a distracted caregiver or an absent caregiver, and they didn't have someone who was able to really tune in, we call it attunement, really tune in to the infant's emotional state, then that baby's brain is going to get wired a little bit differently than a baby whose caregivers are always available and know how to nurture. So the mommy's job or the caregiver's job is to kind of swoop in when the baby's having emotions and really attend to them with her tone, her eyes, her body language, and regulate the infant's nervous system. And the infant cannot regulate his or her own nervous system.
Interesting. Now, so there's a physiological, it's not just this emotional kind of connection. There's something physiological going on.
Exactly. It's not just emotional. So the infant is having emotional reaction, having tension in her body, but she can't regulate that. And often moms come to me and they'll say, you know, my kid's having tantrums and I just throw her in a room. I don't know what to do with her. Mm-hmm. And I say, you know, she can't regulate her nervous system. She's not doing it to upset you.
Right.
She can't regulate her nervous system. So you need to have skills. You need to swoop in and you need to know how to calm and soothe her.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what good parenting is all about, is attunement. And when parents are capable of doing this, the infant forms a very secure attachment to the caregiver and begins to form thoughts about the world. The world is safe. When I'm upset, someone comforts me. And all the while this is happening, different structures of the brain are coming online, okay? The top part of the brain where the soothing and calming functions reside are coming online, and the regulatory systems where we can regulate our behaviors and say, okay, one cookie is enough. Those are coming online. The emotional brain is kind of almost online from the beginning, the fight, flight, or freeze part of the brain. And integrative structures are developing between those parts of the brain. So these structures are developing, getting hardwired in, and coming online based on the kind of attunement we get from our caregivers. So this is why it's so critical that we get that kind of attunement, but many people don't, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And so the really great news is that even if you didn't get that kind of attunement when you were young, you can learn a mindfulness practice, what I teach in the book, and you can learn internal attunement. You can learn to begin to do that for yourself and rewire those circuits in your brain.
Mm-hmm. So can you just give us a quick example of a baby or a toddler who's not getting that attunement and what's going on within them, you know, as they don't get what they need?
All right, so you have a baby, a toddler, and the toddler is feeling some tension in her body. Something's upset her, something she saw, something she's feeling in her body, so she starts to, or maybe even like a little toddler, she's in the market with mommy, you know, and mm-hmm. she wants to, you know, have that ice cream
right.
that she sees the other kid has.
Uh-huh.
And mommy says, no ice cream today, you know, we had way too much ice cream yesterday at the party. And
mm-hmm.
so the toddler starts to scream, and she feels tension in her body, and she's feeling very upset. And so now we need mommy to attend to this, you know, not disregard it or not just angrily drag her out of the store,
mm-hmm.
but for mommy either to take her to the side or even to say, we need to walk out of the store for a minute to say, you know, I can see that you're having some really big feelings right now, and you're feeling upset and angry and mad that you can't have the ice cream. And that's really understandable because ice cream tastes really good,
mm-hmm.
and that other little girl is having an ice cream. And I can really understand you wanting to have an ice cream too. You know, we can't have it today, but we can have it another time. We will have it another time. And so today, you know, let's go back in and we'll finish our shopping, and then when we go home, you know, we can play that game that you really like to play.
Or, mm-hmm.
you know, so the mommy is attending to the child's feelings and helping her regulate. She's really sending a message that it's not that we're never having ice cream. We'll have it again. Mm-hmm. So goodies can come again. We also have limits. But there are other goodies in the world. Like when we get home, we can play with your toys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's sending a lot of messages to her child.
And I know that there are probably a lot of parents who, instead of doing that, they shame the child. They distance themselves from the child emotionally. And so that's the flip side of that same coin of the parent dealing with the child.
Kid asks for something and starts to throw a little bit of a tantrum, and the mom starts yelling, and you always do this, or, you know, you don't need that ice cream. You know, you're gaining weight, you know,
uh-huh.
the worst.
Yes.
start that kind of approach. I even had a mom, you know, whose kid would act out in the car. She'd start having these screaming fests in the car. And so the mom said, I have the faintest idea what to do with her. You know, I just start screaming back at her. And I know that doesn't work. And so I said, just pull over. Whenever she's doing it, just pull over and say, I can see you're really having some big feelings, so we're going to stop the car and find out what's going on for you. And when you're feeling better, we'll continue the drive. And her daughter, like, stopped pretty soon. You know, she really just needed a little attention from mommy.
Uh-huh.
And she actually stopped doing that routine pretty quickly. And my client came back and said, like, I'm amazed, you know, that something so simple worked. And I said, she just needed kindness from you,
uh-huh.
you know, and what was happening is that every time she had those feelings, you would scream at her.
Right. So we have to go to a quick break, but when we return, I'm going to want you to talk about what happens to us long term when we don't get what we need, when we don't get that attunement. Stay tuned for more with Julie Simon.
Are you traveling most of your day? Do you want to take Transformation Talk Radio with you anywhere you go? Well, guess what? There's an app for that. Just go to the App Store on your Apple device or the Google Play Store on your Android and search Transformation Talk Radio. Catch all of our live shows no matter where you are. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Laura Richer, host of On the Verge Radio. Sometimes you hear encouraging messages like transform your life now, become empowered, create the life you crave, and it all seems overwhelming and you're not sure where to start. I'm here to tell you that self-improvement is not always fun and easy, but it is always worth it. The path to creating positive changes begins with releasing the things that have been holding you back. Then you can create a life that inspires you. I know this because I've done it. You can find out more about what I do by visiting my website, seattlehealinghypnosis.com. I look forward to supporting you on your journey.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. For centuries, spiritual traditions have talked about how humans have an energy field, or aura, surrounding them. Although skeptical scientists refuted this for decades, science is now beginning to catch up with spirituality. Scientists can actually measure light emanating from living beings, so they can measure the human aura, which in scientific terms is known as the biofield. Many medical practitioners around the world use an instrument to evaluate a patient's biofield for the purpose of diagnosing illness. They understand that imbalanced or insufficient light in a person's energy field indicates a physical or emotional problem. The good news? There are ways to balance and increase your light, resulting in greater well-being. For more information, please check out stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Show me how you feel. More than words is all you have to make it real.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Julie, I'm fascinated with this concept of the brain getting wired and structured at such a young age. And you talked about some wonderful approaches to helping a parent be attuned with their youngster. What happens to us long term when that doesn't happen? Let's say we're shamed. Let's say we're not seen or understood. And we have like our basic needs met so that we actually survive. But we get into adulthood and we've never had that kind of connection. What happens?
Well, you know, if you think basically of kind of if you divide the brain, you know, simply for right now into two parts, you know, the upstairs part, which is the logical, rational, regulating part, self-soothing, self-comforting, and then the downstairs, let's say, is the emotional brain, the fight, flight, or freeze. If your childhood is very stressful, if you're being shamed a lot, if you're being criticized often, if you're being neglected, even if nobody's doing anything to you, but they're not available, you're mm-hmm. feeling abandoned and neglected. What happens is that emotional brain, the downstairs brain, becomes the dominant part. It's getting activated too much. You're afraid too often.
Uh-huh.
You're scared too often, you're worried too often. That part of the brain's getting activated too much, and the structures, the integrative structures that need to develop and kind of wire in, if you will, to that upstairs brain, that soothing part, just aren't getting developed. And at the same time, the chemistry, the structures that create the chemistry of the brain, the soothing chemicals that are created in the brain, and the energizing chemicals like dopamine, those structures aren't necessarily getting laid down properly. You know, this is a young brain is like a body, you know, it's developing, and it's like a body needs nutrition. You know, an infant and a small child needs proper nutrition to grow and develop everything that the body needs to grow and develop.
Of course, yeah.
The brain also needs its fuel, and its fuel is sufficient and consistent emotional nurturance.
Wow.
So, say it again, sufficient and consistent emotional nurturance. That's the fuel that develops the integrative structures and connections in the brain. So if we don't get that, we're going to be more emotionally reactive. We're going to find that we have difficulty regulating our behaviors. We may find that we can't activate ourselves to do things we want to do. We may find that we can't set limits with ourselves. We say, you know, I'm not going to eat any more ice cream, and we go and have more. We can't get out of bed in the morning. We're going to have trouble. We can't regulate our impulses. We find that we're compulsive with certain things.
Uh-huh.
We're impulsive with certain things. So when those structures aren't connecting properly, we're going to find that we have difficulty regulating ourselves in many ways.
So why food?
Well, for one thing, food, I think, is incredibly pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we all find that from a very early age, how pleasurable food is. And it's interesting that you say why food, because that's a really good question. I mean, not everybody turns to food,
mm-hmm.
you know. Some people turn to cigarettes.
Right.
Some people turn to alcohol, right? I did a radio program where the woman said, you know, she was alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
She said, I wish I would have turned to food because I wouldn't have, you know, had DUIs and other things.
Sure.
I think, you know, we're going to go for the substance or the activity. It could be gambling. It could be sex addiction. We're going to go for the activity or the substance that alters our brain in the way we like it,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh.
Now, some people can eat, like I'm a person, give you an example. I can eat a scone, and I get a powerful flood of pleasing chemicals
mm-hmm.
from the first bite of the scone, right? It's like
right.
crack for me.
Uh-huh.
But I know people who could have a scone, and they could leave it, and it could sit there. You know, I've been out with people, you know, have coffee and a scone,
uh-huh.
and I'm looking at theirs. You know, they've
uh-huh.
hardly touched it or take a bite, and they're leaving it, right?
Right, right.
Because it doesn't do that to their brain,
uh-huh.
right? So it really is going to depend on, it's the same thing when you go into a hospital. One person gets opiates for pain reduction, and that person's going to become addicted and want to get more prescriptions.
Right.
The other person gets it and says, no, doctor, don't give me another prescription. I don't like the way I feel on it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Your unique biochemistry that will determine, you know, which substance you go for.
Uh-huh.
In combination with some trauma.
Sure. And I certainly know that, like, when I was growing up, I would get certain rewards of food, you know, and it's like if I had to go grocery shopping with my mom when I was little, she let me pick out certain type of chips. Like, I'd get to pick out some chips, and that was a big, big deal. So it's like if I went and did some work with her when I was really little, then that was my reward. And so I know that some of the behavior, too, from parents to child sort of set me up for, like, chips are one of the things that I have to be careful of because of that very reason.
Right. And that's a really good example, is that, you know, I try to teach parents not to do this, where, you know, even kind and caring parents, the child will come home from school and say, you know, I'm upset. Nobody wanted to play with me on the playground today.
Uh-huh.
And the parent says, oh, gosh, why don't we go out and get some ice cream?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And so there's an example of a parent who doesn't know how really to attune to the child's emotional state.
Yes.
Doesn't know how to offer validation. You know, it makes sense that you're feeling upset about that. Doesn't
uh-huh.
know how to offer soothing. I'm sorry that you had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
I know how uncomfortable it is to want to fit in and to have people push you away. And it isn't teaching the child to have any of these skills, and also isn't offering the child really any viable solutions. You know, ice cream isn't the solution to not fitting in.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So we can see how parents are missing these skills. This book, by the way, is so good for parents to read because, you know, parents can learn about attuning to their little ones and not making these same mistakes that perhaps, you know, some of our parents made.
Right. But doesn't it also require the parent to heal some of their own wounds associated with not having had that kind of attunement when they were babies and toddlers?
It does, and I think that's sometimes why people don't want to read things like this, you know, because they don't really want to face, you know, face some of those painful memories and, you know, look at some of the skills that they're missing. But I always, you know, I always say to people who come to me for overeating, I say, you know, the good news is you're just missing skills and your brain got wired in a particular way and it can be rewired. And so we just go slow, we take our time, and we start to learn these skills. We start to learn how to, you know, tune in. The first skill in the book is called Pop the Hood, where we learn to, you know, when we're upset, when we've had a difficult day and a fight with a coworker or something happened and we want to go to that drive-thru, where we, before we go in the drive-thru, we just take a little time and say, what is going on with me? So just like the mommy steps out of the market with the toddler and says, what's going on? What are you feeling today? Or the kid comes home from school upset and the mom says, let's sit down for a minute and I want you to tell me what happened and what you're feeling. So we take that time to tune in. Research shows that just taking that little bit of time to tune in is already regulating the nervous system. It's already calming us down.
Yeah, so it's kind of like we're learning to reparent ourselves, in a sense, in order to heal that.
We're learning to reparent ourselves, and it's it's very doable. It's very learnable. It's kind of like, you know, if someone said, you know, could anybody learn to play the guitar or the piano or learn Spanish, right? It's very doable. You can follow the steps, and you can learn how to tune in to your emotional world, learn how to recognize what your true non-food needs are, learn to address thoughts that are kind of self-defeating, negative, hopeless, you know, and really learn how to meet your needs.
Yeah, this is fascinating. When we come back, Julie, I want you to talk about what some of the signs are if we're an emotional eater, and learn some more of the skills that you have in your book about dealing with this. Stay tuned for more with Julie Simon when we return here in just a few moments.
Darling, just dive right in. Follow my lead. I found a girl.
Let It Go Radio. The future awaits you. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Barbara Scheidegger explores the way to clarity, peace, and how to live a successful life on your terms by turning negative experiences into positive ones. Barbara's curiosity about the human experience drives her both personally and professionally. As a life coach, author, and renowned clinical hypnotherapist, Barbara knows how to move forward in a natural, organic way without side effects. If you want to grow, be sure to tune in to Let It Go Radio. To learn more, visit letitgohypnosis.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Defining success and putting minds to work. With the Higher Learners Career and Leadership Series, Rudy Racine will help you craft your personal definition of success, offering support and guidance as you move forward towards your goals. Take the leap. With the right mix of focus and motivation, anything can be achieved. Tune in every first and third Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 Eastern. And for more information on Rudy Racine and Higher Learners, visit Rudy's site at higherlearners.com. That's H-I-R-E learners.com.
Miss any shows during the week? Don't worry, we've got you covered.
Yeah!
With the free Transformation Talk Radio app, you'll have access to all of the past week's shows in the palm of your hand. Yeah! Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio anywhere you go with our free app for any of your devices. Check out our app in the App Store and Google Play Store today.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Maine. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmaine.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
You were the someone waiting for me, 'cause we were just kids when we fell in love, not knowing what it was. I will not give you up this time.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm talking today with the author of When Food is Comfort, Nurture Yourself Mindfully, Rewire Your Brain, and End Emotional Eating, Julie Simon. Julie, okay, we've talked about sort of how emotional eating can develop. What are the signs that we're emotional eaters?
Well, it is important, I think, for people to really know what emotional eating looks like. And in the book, I have a checklist that people can take a look at. So let me run down that and people can see if this feels like it applies to them. So if you're an emotional eater, you might be using food as a tranquilizer to dull emotions that are difficult to cope with, such as anxiety, anger, sadness, frustration, hopelessness, loneliness, shame, guilt, and even happiness and joy and excitement. Emotional eaters will eat even to celebrate. You may be using food to calm yourself when you're experiencing unpleasant bodily sensations, like agitation or nervousness, muscle tension, butterflies in your stomach. You might be turning to food for soothing and comfort. Now, many people use food for pleasure. Emotional eaters might be using food also for escape, fulfillment, excitement. You might be eating when you're stressed out. You might be eating when you feel numb. You might be using food to silence those negative, critical, self-defeating thoughts in an attempt to quiet your mind. Perhaps you eat when you're overwhelmed and you're feeling paralyzed. You just can't get to your to-do list. You might eat to distract yourself from low motivation states like boredom or lethargy or apathy. I often have people say, you know, I'm really bored these days. Maybe you eat as a way to procrastinate. You might eat because you feel like your life is lacking purpose or meaning or passion and inspiration. You might be trying to fill up an inner emptiness with food. Perhaps you're eating because you feel so much regret regarding your life. Maybe you feel deprived in your life. Many emotional eaters eat to reward themselves. They also eat to punish themselves. Emotional eaters often eat to rebel against someone or something. I've had many young women who I've worked with who are rebelling against their parents. Obviously they're injuring themselves more than anyone else.
Right.
You might eat because feeling full makes you feel safe. Maybe you're eating to ward off sexual attention. So those are examples of how you would know if your eating has an emotional component to it. And especially if, for anybody, you know, listening, if you regularly eat when you're not hungry, if you regularly eat beyond full, or if you're choosing to eat unhealthy comfort foods more often than you prefer, then there's a good chance that your eating has an emotional component to it.
Right. So, you've talked some about sort of the self-regulation. How do we go, like, if, let's say that we've identified that we've got at least a component of emotional eating. Well, we need to eat to live, and of course, eating is very pleasurable, and so there's an aspect of joy that we get out of eating, you know, delicious foods. But how do we go about sort of dealing with our issues, our negative issues associated with food?
Well, again, if we stop just for a second and we think about what this term self-regulation means, I mean, really all of us would like to be in a place in our lives where no matter what it is, whether it's food or alcohol or shopping or gambling or, you know, internet watching or binge TV watching, whatever it is, we'd all like to feel that we're in control.
Right.
That we can say, I'd like to have a sliver of that cake and then to stop at that, right? Or to say, yes, I'd like to have one or two of those hard candies and not feel like we have to eat the box. Or I could have one handful of those chips. You were talking about chips.
Uh-huh.
One handful of those chips and then put the bag away and I'm done. We'd all like to be able to manage those behaviors. And self-regulation refers to our ability to manage our emotions and our moods, regulate our nervous system. So that means when we're all stressed out, be able to regulate our nervous system, control or redirect that those impulses, like the impulse to go back and get, you know, three more handfuls of the chip, and to think before we act. And so if our brain didn't get wired properly when we were young, as we said, we're going to have trouble doing that. And we're going to find, gee, there's kind of a young part of me that seems to be running the show. I remember during my emotional eating days, standing in the kitchen, I would often overeat at night. And I was standing in the kitchen, and I'd had some popcorn, and now I was going to move on to, like, cookies or something.
Right.
And part of me, let's say a wiser part of me, said, and probably a little bit more of a critical part of me, a voice said, you know, you should stop. You know, you want to lose some weight, and you're not going to lose weight this way, and eating this much processed food isn't good for you. You need to stop. And this was a turning point in my journey where I heard that very young voice of mine, that what I call the feeling self, said, no, I don't want to stop. I don't care about all that stuff. And the voice tried to say, you know, we have an outfit we want to fit in for that wedding. And you know, we're not going to lose weight if we keep doing this. And that very young part of me said, I don't care. I don't care. I want it anyway. So it was a turning point because I realized that I didn't have a voice that was strong enough to manage that young feeling voice of mine. You know, that part of me, that very young part of me, was running the show more often than not. She was always having the last word. I want more of it now. So I'm going to have it. So I needed to develop a voice. And as I developed that voice, what I call the inner nurturer, that voice was able to say to her when she would say, no, I don't want to stop eating. I want more. That voice would say, and she would say, I don't care. I don't care about gaining weight. I don't care about health. I want it now. The voice would say, well, I care, sweetie. I care. And I'm here with you, and I'm setting a limit now. We're stopping now, and we're going to go in the other room, and I'm going to be with you, and I want to hear about how you're feeling and what's going on, but we're going to stop for now. And I was beginning, as I was doing this work, I was beginning to build a voice that could regulate that young part of me that didn't want regulation, that was kind of flapping around, you know, inside and saying no. Starting to develop a part, I was starting to develop an alliance with the most kind, nurturing, compassionate. So even when I had self-defeating thoughts, like, you know, I look terrible, I look horrific, or my hair looks ugly, or, you know, any kind of self-defeating thoughts, that part would step in and say, did I tell you how much I love you? You know, did I tell you that you're not your hair? You're like this incredible being, and so what if your hair is a little funky today? You know, starting to develop a part of me that could nurture me and take care of me, and this had never developed because I didn't have nurturing parents.
Right, right. So it sounds like it's not about the traditional diet approach of control, but rather loving, setting loving boundaries and developing that inner nurturer who can do that.
Right, and you know, when we do the work, even in the first book, because in the first book we learn about what I call limit-setting conversations,
uh-huh.
we don't even, in the first book and even in the second book, we don't even try to set those limits so fast because, you know, for an emotional eater, someone swooping in and setting limits, that just feels terrible. So first what we do is we build an alliance with that part of ourselves. We build that inner supportive voice. We build an alliance between that young part that feels like she hasn't had, there's never enough. There's just uh-huh. never been enough love, kindness, support, friendship, you know, just never enough, and she's eating to fill all that up.
Mm-hmm.
We build that alliance, and we build that voice that I'm here with you, I love you. We start to really learn to identify not only just what we're feeling, but also what are you needing? Like, what do you need mm-hmm. in this situation? You came home, you had a really difficult day at work. What do you need? Most emotional eaters will say to me, I have the faintest idea what I need. Uh-huh. I don't know, ice cream, that's what I need, you know.
Right, right.
And then they're learning how to say, no, it's not ice cream that I need, it's reassurance that I need. Mm-hmm. It's comfort that I need. Oh, wait, I need hope. It's hope that I'm needing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just even identifying your needs is comforting and soothing.
This is brilliant. We have to go to another quick break, but stay tuned for more about emotional eating with Julie Simon.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. What does the word healing mean? Many think that healing merely means eliminating symptoms. However, based on my many years as a healer, I have a much broader perspective on the word. Healing can manifest in a variety of ways, including having physical problems resolve, becoming more emotionally centered, experiencing better relationships, gaining greater clarity, and feeling more spiritually connected. True healing always includes some level of transformation. Whatever form healing takes, there is one commonality, an improvement in quality of life. To me, the highest form of healing goes beyond aligning with wellness. It comes from recognizing our soul's voice and allowing it to speak through us. And in that sense, don't we all yearn to heal into our wholeness? Please visit stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Are you traveling most of your day? Do you want to take Transformation Talk Radio with you anywhere you go? Well, guess what? There's an app for that. Just go to the App Store on your Apple device or the Google Play Store on your Android and search Transformation Talk Radio. Catch all of our live shows no matter where you are. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to the Kristen Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Julie, this hour is flying by. I want to make sure, first of all, people know that the titles of your two books, The Emotional Eater's Repair Manual and this more recent one, which is the one I've read that's just fabulous, When Food is Comfort. And also, how can people connect with you? Because I know that you do offer some online programs.
Yes, I mean, they can connect with me at my website, overeatingrecovery.com. And I have a 12-week emotional eating recovery program. We've just started back for the summer, so if anybody happens to be listening and says, oh, my God, I want to go through this program, there's still time to join us. We've just gotten started.
Fabulous.
We're going for the whole summer. And they can find out information on the website, and they can also get two free chapters of both the books on the website if they want to start reading tomorrow.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, you talk about self-regulation and, you know, understanding our emotions. Seems to me there are plenty of people who are kind of numb to their emotions. Can you help us sort of understand the path to getting clear about what we're actually feeling?
Yes, you know, I think some people avoid doing what I would say like emotional growth work, mm-hmm. because they have had experiences. Maybe they've been in therapy before and found that it wasn't successful. Maybe they've had talk therapy where, you know, therapists talk to them about their feelings, but maybe they found their life wasn't really changing, things mm-hmm. weren't really shifting.
Right.
And so for many, many emotional eaters, many overeaters, we need another approach. And certainly talking about our emotions can be helpful, but for some people, like I have a chapter in the book called The Body Remembers, mm-hmm. And I give an example of a client, Jan, in the book, who really wasn't very in touch with her feelings. She had been raised by a fairly abusive father and a very passive, depressed mother, and so she had learned to kind of cut off, very early on, cut off from all emotions and just kind of dive into her work. She was a successful physician, but really cut off from her emotions, and it was having ramifications in her personal life,
uh-huh.
not only for her, but also her daughter was, you know, not feeling her feelings. So with Jan, I showed her that we didn't have to talk about her feelings, but that we could take situations that were going on in her life, like dealing with her tantruming and her teenage daughter who was having meltdowns, by going into the body, by doing what's called somatic work and mm-hmm. addressing what she was feeling when she was dealing with her daughter. And
so feeling, when you say feeling, it's not the emotional feelings, it's actually the sensations in the body.
Exactly. So when we talk about feelings, we're talking about both emotions and bodily sensations. And so in Jan's case, she really couldn't label emotions. Maybe briefly, but she wasn't feeling anything when she labeled emotions. So mm-hmm. instead of us labeling emotions, she would maybe start to talk about an argument with her daughter, and I would ask her what was she experiencing in her body.
Uh-huh.
And she began to really start to understand that her body was the way in, that uh-huh. her body could tell her exactly, you know, what she was struggling with. And then she would get to the emotions. So by paying attention to the sensations. Oh, right now my neck is so tight and I'm getting that terrible pain in my stomach again. Okay, let's just stay present to that.
Mm-hmm.
Does it change? Does it shift? You know, we'll breathe into it a little bit. And then emotion would start to surface because all of that, those bodily sensations were, they were letting her know that emotion was there, trapped in the body, a lot of energy, a lot of emotion trapped in the body.
Right.
So we would learn to release it, and then emotion would come up, and she would, you know, be able to label the emotions. But labeling them just wasn't that important, really feeling them.
Yes.
And moving through them. And we have skills, you know, that we learn in the book to do just that.
Mm-hmm. So how do we end up in the situation where we've got it kind of stored in our body, but we're not aware of the emotions that are stored there?
Well, we're going to see that kind of manifestation more typically when people have had some trauma. And when I say trauma, you know, there's kind of big trauma and small trauma. I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that you had to have been, like, locked in a basement. But, you know, if you've had some neglect, if you've had caregivers that were not able to be attuned to your emotions, if you've actually had more abuse, a lot of criticism, shame, even, you know, physical violence, you are most likely going to learn very early on to cut off from those emotions. And then we store them in the body. We call it somaticizing. We kind of stuff it all down into the body. We break down soft tissue with it. We cause health challenges with it. So typically we're going to see more of that pattern when people have come from backgrounds where they were not allowed to feel.
Yeah, that makes sense. One of the questions that's come up for me and is, have you ever looked into if there are differences with emotional eating between somebody who had been breastfed versus bottle fed?
You know, I just have a sense from, I've been doing this nearly 30 years, that people who have been breastfed have less oral habits. This is just anecdotal. I don't have research supporting it, but I think that I just have a sense that breastfeeding, you know, especially with a nurturing mommy, you know, is the beginning of, you know, a lot of, it's the beginning of early attachment.
Right.
It's so nourishing. It's so nurturing. But I don't think it's certainly not all there is, because you can have a mommy that's, you know, breastfeeds you, but is completely not attuned to your emotions as you're developing. So it could never be the whole picture.
Sure.
But I've often wondered if people who have oral fixations like smoking, you know, or drinking, or even eating, if that does have something to do with oral, you know, with breastfeeding early on. I don't know that anyone has the answer to that yet.
Right. And of course, it's not randomized either. So, you know, we can never really know what the cause is. But that's something that I was curious about. And the other thing that's come to mind when you're talking about distracted parenting, what about these days with people doing things on their cell phones so often when they are, you know, with their babies and young children in strollers and such?
Oh, it's so upsetting to me to see that. I actually get upset when I see it with people with their animals, too. And I see people walking their dogs, and they're on their phone the entire time. And I'm like, why don't you want to just bond with your animal you know, and take in the day, you know, than be so distracted all the time? But certainly with children, I mean, I think this is a terrible pattern that parents have, and parents are giving their kids, you know, iPads. I mean, I have moms who say, you know, I don't know what to do with my kid in the morning. You know, my kid gets up so early, so I give her the iPad. And I'm like, no. You know, it's not good for their brains. Really terrible for their brains. And all those, the, you know, electromagnetic fields, not good.
And then,
but on the other hand, I understand what's happening with parents is that today, you know, in our modern world, so much to do and so much to take care of. We're not raising our children in villages anymore. We've got a lot of single parents trying to get it all done. So it's a much bigger conversation. How do we support parents so that they're not having to do it all by themselves? Because I think when they're having to do it all by themselves, there's going to be a good chance that they're not going to be well attuned to their children.
And
we need communities. We need communal setups for moms and dads, you know, to give them a break, let them get their things done. And we need children to have exposure to many more caring adults. I mean, if you happen to have, you know, your mom is not very good at nurturing and that's the only adult that you really have a lot of contact with, you're in trouble.
Yeah, that makes sense. Julie, this has been a great conversation. I just want to give your book another shout out, When Food is Comfort. And Julie's website is overeatingrecovery.com. Thank you so much for joining us here today, Julie.
Thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
And I want to thank you for joining me here today, joining us here today. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.StellarReflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.TransformationTalkRadio.com.